Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Hello and welcome to a very special edition of Atlanta Business Radio. This is a special series we're going to be bringing to you periodically here called Atlanta's Most Trusted Advisors. And our goal is to provide valuable information that all business owners and managers can use in their day-to-day work and help them succeed and prosper. I am Ryan McPherson, and I'm alongside my co-host, Bonnie Buell-Russick. How are you doing this morning, Bonnie?
Doing well. Hi, Ryan.
I am doing good. Thank you so much for being here. We look forward to hearing more from Atlanta's Most Trusted Advisors. We have two great guests in studio today. Will you share with our listeners, Bonnie, who that is?
Absolutely. We have Todd Stanton here today. He is the founder of Stanton Law. And that is a firm that provides legal representation to business owners around the topic of employment. And then we also have Matt Tavrog. He is a partner at Bell Oaks Executive Search, which has been around for 45 years. And they provide executive searches, look for manager to senior level executives in a variety of industries and company sizes. So thank you guys for being here today. We're going to talk about employment and all the ups, downs, pros, cons of it.
Thanks for having us.
All right. So let's start with you, Todd. You are in employment law. Is that right?
I specialize in management representation and employment issues. You're correct.
Okay. And how long have you been doing that?
For almost a decade and a half now. I started with Fisher & Phillips, which is a labor employment boutique that is growing gangbusters as well. Left there in 2006 and went to a prestigious Atlanta firm known as Powell Goldstein at the time. It's now Bryan Cave. And then started my own firm in 2011. I'm proud to announce that I just hired my fifth attorney last week.
Congratulations.
Alex, thank you. Alex Barfield started with us on Monday. So that brings a total of six attorneys practicing in our office right now.
All right. Six on staff and Alex being the latest.
Yes.
So does he get a special trophy or anything or a welcome party for him?
Well, then you can't spoil the surprise.
Okay. Sorry about that. So, all right. Thank you, Todd. And Matt, what about a little background about you and your experience with Bell Oaks Executive Search?
Yeah. Thanks for having me. Bell Oaks is a 45-year-old Atlanta-based executive search firm. And we're headquartered right here in the perimeter area in the South Terraces building across from the mall. I've been with Bell Oaks going on about 7 years. Prior to that, I was with CBON Communications in a sales position. And that was a fun experience. But much like we do every day, I got a phone call from Bell Oaks recruiting me to become a manager of sales for one of our clients. I came into the office, wasn't actively looking, but thought, why not?
Yeah. They called you, right?
Yeah. Next thing I knew, I had a good rapport with the recruiter who had called me. And the next thing I knew, I was interviewing with the company. Lo and behold, that was 2008. And here I am today as a partner in the firm. We're a boutique firm specializing in helping our clients hire mid-management to senior executive level positions. And we serve clients and companies of all shapes and sizes, but that's our niche focus.
Fantastic. So I think we got two fabulous guests here, Bonnie, who are going to help us dissect the world of employment law and what employers need to kind of keep out there and keep in mind when hiring people.
Absolutely. I appreciate you guys coming in today. And I kind of want to kick it off with a question that I've heard a lot from others is, and I may have done this myself, what do you see as the biggest mistake most new business owners make when they're making their first hire?
You want to take this, Matt, or you want me to? I got lots of them.
Go ahead.
Let's start with the threshold issue that they try and squeeze what should be an employer and an employee into an independent contractor.
Yes.
So they say, I'm not ready to dip my toe into the employment water, so I'm just going to stay safe with an independent contractor. And as I discussed last week with on another show, Ryan, that is fraught with peril. It is not a matter of agreement whether somebody is determined to be deemed an independent contractor or an employee. It's a matter of law. And if it walks like a duck and talks like a duck, they're going to be determined to be an employee. Go ahead and bite the bullet and get it into the employment relationship.
Aren't there like three questions or three threshold things that have to be met for somebody to be It's the decision between independent contractor and employee, or is it?
Oh, different? We're that easy.
Oh, okay. Because no, that's what I'd always heard from a tax perspective, I guess.
Well, that's true. And the IRS has their determination of who's an employee versus who's a contractor. The State Department of Labor has a different standard. The EEOC has a different standard for Title VII purposes. Depending on which bureaucrat you're dealing with, you're going to get a different response. What it boils down to really is it the right of control? Are you controlling the job that person is doing? If you're providing the materials, if you're providing the office space, if you're paying them either a salary, a set weekly wage, or if you're giving them benefits, if they don't have the opportunity for profit or loss, if you're paying that 1099 on a Social Security number instead of a federal employee ID number, those are all things that are going to weigh in favor of an employee versus an independent contractor classification. Once you get to that threshold, and I think this is where Matt and I were discussing this before we came on air, the next biggest mistake I see is rushing into a particular hire where you need a butt in the seat, you need that job done right away, and you do not thoroughly vet that applicant in terms of fit, in terms of employment history, in terms of capability. And once that person's in your door, it's very difficult in many cases to, even in an at-will state, to get rid of them. So rushing into it, and I think Matt would agree on that.
Yeah, I would say if we're talking about an early stage company that's making their first key hire, most of the time I would assume that the previous people that they've hired came from maybe friends or family, their network, previous relationships. So I'm going to answer your question through the perspective of the first key hire that they're making that is external, that maybe they're not familiar with. That's what we help our clients execute, is searches where they don't have the right person in their Rolodex or within their immediate network. I think oftentimes the pitfall there is that a company wants to hire somebody that can immediately produce results. Maybe it's in a sales role or a revenue generation capacity. What we always encourage our clients to do and to focus on is identifying candidates that are true to the values that of the business and that they are trying to create and are great cultural fits. Because you could find somebody and say, wow, they're going to be great for the first 3 months, but look at it long term. Are they the right fit for the team that you're trying to build and the company that you're trying to create?
I agree on that. And I kind of want to follow up on the idea of the culture thing, because, I mean, just from my perspective, finding people that fit our culture and fit our personality as a company has been much more important to me than actually finding every skill that I need in the person. I can train people on that.
Right.
Do you find that that is more important to employees and employers now than maybe it was in the past? And how do you recommend, and we can put this to Todd as well, how do you create that culture that people want to be a part of?
So the first part of that question is trying to figure out if an individual is the fit for the culture of your business.
Right.
That's a great question. There's so many ways to try and vet that. One of which, being just understanding what it is that you are rather than what you want to be, what you are today. And then second, when you're going out and attracting candidates, really vet them and put them through multiple rounds of interviews, put them in different environments, and get a good sense of who they are rather than what they can do. What was the second part of your question?
Well, actually, let me follow up on that real quick with another question and say, how do you feel about things like personality indicator tests and, whether it be Myers-Briggs or, some of the other ones out there? Does that help with the whole culture thing, or is that kind of, can send you down a rabbit trail that may not really give you any valuable information?
Yeah. I'm a huge believer in assessment tests. Okay. I think they tell a ton about a candidate, about maybe not so much culture fit, but really how they respond to things like stress, time management, multitasking, how extroverted or introverted that they are. So yeah, I'm a huge fan of utilizing those assessments, and we have clients that utilize all sorts of different assessments.
Okay. Okay. The second part of that question was kind of more on a broad scale of how do you create a culture at your company? As the, CEO of a firm or a business of any sort, you do want to create some sort of culture. And I think a lot of times, to your point, what we want to be and what we actually are two very different things. Mm-hmm. But you know, how, if you are talking to the owner of a company about that sort of thing, how do you go about creating the culture that you want?
Well, I just went through this process with Stanton Law.
Yeah.
And as I started to grow my firm, and so this isn't necessarily the employment law realm, but write it down. It's easy to say, well, I know what my mission is. It's easy to say, I know what my vision for this company is. I know what's a good personality fit for the attorneys I'd like to hire, the staff that I'd like to bring on board. But until I write it down, until I start to articulate what it is that distinguishes Stanton Law and what my vision for this firm is, which incidentally is a very practical approach to this. My experience is that litigation is a black hole. And so I want to bring on folks who see litigation as a black hole. Let's try and avoid getting into that process. And so if I'm hiring somebody who is has a reputation of being a bruiser in litigation, who is going to paper the other side with motions and seek abuse of litigation sanctions and all of those other common tactics that are fine in another perspective, well, that's not going to be a good fit for Stanton Law. And so as I start, I had to write down what I want my firm to be, or what I want the firm to be, in order to be able to articulate that, to be able to, so certainly articulating it to a candidate is important, but knowing what it is and being able to bullet point it you have to start there.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I agree. It was funny because we're coming off the holidays and I have twin daughters that are 2.5 years old. And it was a fun year this year because they really enjoyed watching all the Christmas movies. And one of the best ones is Elf. And there was a scene in there where they recite the code of the elves. And they're all just speaking about the must-haves that are associated with being a good elf. And what I thought about when you were just asking that question is that it was hammered into their brains into what it is to be a good worker within the North Pole. Mm-hmm. But my favorite clients that I work with are the ones that can quickly recite the values of their business and, you know, that summarize the culture. Not only that, but it's again, it's just something that they're constantly thinking about. And then as they're evaluating candidates and they're scoring candidates, and I love companies that have kind of a scorecard that they evaluate candidates that they're considering hiring, the most important factor is if they line up with the values and the code of the company and the business that they're trying to create.
And I would say, Bonnie, that as we're where we started with this is how do we hire these employees? And I brought up that rushing into that process is one of a common mistake I see. And what we've already talked about, whether it's the personality test, which incidentally do raise some employment law issues, but that probably beyond the scope of this. But that and then articulating the mission, articulating the vision. You can see that's not something you decide at breakfast you're going to hire somebody and by lunch you've got the hire. It's going to take some time to do that if you're going to follow what's best practices. I would also suggest that it depends upon the position that you're looking to hire. Certainly in Matt's world where you're looking at high five figure and six figure salaries and above, you want to take the time to vet those things out.
That's right.
In many instances, if you're looking to plug a spot on a manufacturing line, you don't necessarily need the valedictorian in order to do that. Cultural fit doesn't become as important on those things.
That's right.
And quite frankly, you're going to have to set your expectations a bit lower depending upon what the position is going to be. Now, that's not to say that you shouldn't vet those applicants. Background checks are important. Reference checks are important. Because, and I think you're probably jumping ahead a little bit, but not hiring a bad employee is easier than getting rid of a bad employee. And in my experience, the 5% of employees who are going to cause 95% of your problems throw up red flags at the application process. And if you can stop from hiring them, then you don't have to get rid of them later.
Well, to follow up on that, what are some of those red flags?
Yeah. So the way that I always like to start this is I was on a camping trip with a Grady ER physician, all right? And so this guy was an ER doc, and I said to him at one point, I said, you must see the craziest stuff.
I imagine.
And he rolled his eyes. He said, you had no idea. And he said that they have a saying in the ER that trauma is a chronic condition. And what I took from that is that, you know, getting stabbed the first time is probably the hardest. Your second or third stabbing, if you're going to be in that position, is probably a little bit easier.
Yeah.
And I would suggest that getting fired is a chronic condition, right? Nobody likes to get fired. But once you get over that, right, the second or third termination is probably easier than the first time you got canned. And so I'm not saying that it has to be that you never hire somebody who's been fired. But at the same time, seeing somebody who's been fired before, they got fired for a reason. Mm-hmm. And if you agree that most employers are reasonable, certainly there's exceptions, they let go of that person for a, and one of my favorite reference check questions is simply, is this person eligible for rehire? Mm-hmm. Right. So when I call a former employer of a for an attorney and I say, why did they leave? And they say, we can't talk about that. Right. And here they were just here for these dates. That's all our HR policy will allow us to say. And I say, are they eligible for rehire? If the answer is no, that's telling you something.
That's a big red flag.
That's mm-hmm. three or four red yes. flags, I think, yes. right there.
The main thing that I would say is on how to spot the red flags is have every applicant for your position fill out an application. A resume is not sufficient, right? A resume is my biography. It's my spin on my employment history. But a fully vetted application, right, that asks the hard questions, that asks for an employment history, is going to disclose more details than otherwise. And if I give somebody an application, or if I have a client who gives an applicant an application and says, I want you to fill this out completely. I don't want any gaps in it. I want you to sign, date it, and bring it back to me when it's finished. If they don't do that, they have failed their first test. Mm-hmm. They have failed their first assignment and completed it insufficiently. That should be a red flag, right? And then reading that application is a developed skill, right? When you see somebody who's had 5 jobs in the past 4 years, that's an issue. Mm-hmm. When you see somebody who reason for leaving is a disagreement with supervisor, well, guess what? You're the supervisor with whom they're going to next disagree, right? When you see somebody who quit a $14 or left a $14 an hour job for an $11 an hour job, guess what? They got canned.
Yeah.
Right? That was not a voluntary separation. So if you pay attention to those things for the on your applicants, you can find the people who are going to be trouble down the line.
And some of these HR folks are not reading these red flags at the beginning is what I'm hearing.
Oh, no. Yeah. I stay pretty busy.
Right.
And the fact of the matter is that when I look at somebody who is causing one of my employers an issue, you give me their personnel file and I would be able to go back and hindsight's 2020, mm-hmm. but be able to spot those red flags that if they were careful, right, if they had taken the time to go through the interview process, perhaps they would have seen it.
And well, this seems like common red flags that would even, you know, show up to the layperson. So an experienced HR professional, experienced hiring professional still is unable to see through some of this and make the proper decision when it comes to hiring. That's, for me, is kind of eye-opening.
Yeah, kind of surprised by that. Yes. But so they get under the radar. The hiring manager doesn't see these red flags and decide to hire them. And, you know, we're 6 months down the road and inevitably they're going to be doing a poor job or, you know, creating negative morale or something there. What advice do you have for business owners about dealing with these underperformers and how to address those issues? I mean, is it a good idea to just say, all right, you know what, one strike, you're out? Or, you know, what kind of advice would you have for that? We'll start with Matt on that one.
Yeah, just real quick, also on red flags, for the mm-hmm. sake of assumption that all those things check out, we have a rule at Bell Oaks. You never want the candidate to take the job more than the candidate wants the job themselves. So that is just critical. And you can kind of tell that if there's red flags at the process that maybe the candidate isn't as communicative as you would want them to be. Maybe it's all about the money rather than the position. So mm-hmm. We, you know, have the luxury of being kind of matchmaker between the hiring company and the candidate. And we're able to sense the level of enthusiasm that a candidate has. Even if you're not using a search firm, you should be able to tell, all right, they're on top of it. They're overly communicative. They want this job. And never talk yourself into hiring somebody that isn't ready to run through a brick wall to get that mm-hmm. job. In terms of, all right, now you've made the hiring decision, you're 6 months in. There is a saying, hire slow and fire fast. But at the same time, I understand that's not always feasible because, you know, you probably went through painstaking lengths to get this person on board and you want to try and figure out a way to make it work. The easiest way to do that is just to have as much open and candid dialogue as possible about what the expectations are with that individual, where you need to see improvement, and what the recourse will be if you don't. And then if you're just continuing to go on and you're not seeing the results, there's one of two ways you can take it. You can let that person go, Or you can engage in a search to find that person's replacement and conduct that search while that person is still in the seat, so that you're not left in, you know, in a lingo of 2 or 3 months of having a void within your organization.
Yeah, I would echo his point about firing fast. In my experience, whether it's a majority or most or 90% or 80%, who knows, of it, my employment issues come from a failure to fire. It is not managing unmet expectations and allowing a problem to stick around. And when that problem, as a euphemism for the employee, sticks around, they are creating all sorts of havoc. Their coworkers know they're a deadbeat. Their coworkers know they're not getting a job done. Their coworkers know that they're slacking off. And we touched on it briefly. If you're not disciplining those, if you're not counseling that performance and improving that performance, your good employees are going to look at that and say, my good job doesn't matter, because they let the bad guy get away with it. They let the poor performer stick around. Why should I be doing a good job and bust my pump in order when it doesn't matter? So managing that performance and having that open dialogue, I echo Matt's comments about that. And I would follow up to make sure that they're documented, to make sure that that performance management process is documented thoroughly. Here we and following up on those conversations. Good employees are going, if you're a 95 percenter, right? If we say 5% of your employees cause 95% of your problems, if you're a 95 percenter, if you're a good employee, you get a counseling memo, you get a performance management problem, you get a counseling, you're going to go fix that problem, right? A 5%er is not going to fix that problem. And if you continue to harp on them about it, they're going to go somewhere where they don't get harped on, right? As a precursor to all of that, setting clear expectations for what you as an employer expect out of your employees has got to be. If I tell my employees show up on time and then I leave that as it were, I can't get upset with them if they show up at 5 after 9 or 10 after 9, because they don't know that I mean 9 o'clock means on time. So I have to set my expectations very clearly. And what's going to happen? 95%ers are going to say, my boss told me to be here on time. I'm going to show up at 9 o'clock, or I'm going to have a good excuse for why I'm not. 5%ers are not, and they're going to eventually weed themselves out and go somewhere where they don't have to show up at 9 o'clock, where 9:07, where 9:17 becomes acceptable, right?
Yeah, I think, yeah, no, I totally see what you're saying. I think a lot of times, though, they're not necessarily going to weed themselves out as quickly as you may want, and you do have to go through the process of firing them. And, you know, you were talking a little bit about documentation. I mean, is it sufficient that you have a, you know, you've written down, you kept all these warnings, you had, you know, regular reviews with them, and, you know, in a legal situation, is that sufficient, or are there other things that we should make sure that we have on?
Well, I think it's sufficient for what would be my first question, but I think that, I think your point is, what you're getting at is, if I'm documenting these performance histories, does that be in a better position in order to justify this termination? And the answer is an unequivocal yes, right? With respect to documentation, though, recognize that those are exhibit A, B, and C in any litigation process or any sort of negotiation. And so you have to prepare this documentation as if it were evidence, right? As if a judge or a jury or plaintiff's counsel is going to be reading this. I would not recommend that you put epithets in the, in the documentation, right? I mean, it's got to be professionally written. It's got to be succinct. But with proper documentation, without question, it makes the process easier and smoother, right?
Totally. Yeah. That's amazing to think about.
Yeah. I'd like to jump in with a question for both the gentlemen here, Matt Tavrog with Bell Oaks Executive Search and Todd Stanton from Stanton Law. From your experience, Matt, and the executive side of things, how much can social media hurt your hiring or hurt your retention at the company? And then from Todd, you know, from the blue collar perspective as well, how does social media play into all this hiring process?
Yeah, so that's a great question. And how to, you know, improve your presence in the marketplace. I think everybody knows about the Home Depots, the Cokes, Deltas. It's those mid-market companies that maybe fly under the radar. How do they get a competitive edge to attract top talent within Atlanta? And there's a lot of different ways to do that. But some of the basic blocking and tackling is having a really good presence in the marketplace. I think there's a debate about the value of Facebook, but absolute must-haves are a great website, LinkedIn, Glassdoor, just an overall presence in the marketplace, so that, you know, when an individual goes to your website, they see you know, press releases, they see news, they see things are happening, and then you're a vibrant company that represents, you know, a great place to work that has exciting things going on. Mm-hmm. That's just the basics. So absolutely having a up-to-date social media and website platform is critical. The worst, the worst situations is when a prospective candidate is going to do research on your business, and maybe they go to the blog section or articles section, and the last one on there is July of 2013. It just becomes stale.
Yes.
And can be the negative that you referred to. Yeah. So keeping it up to date, current, and active is critical.
What about if the hiring manager tries to friend you on Facebook? Is that a yes or a no? Should you accept or deny?
From my perspective as an employment, that HR manager needs to get some walking
okay.
papers.
Okay.
Yeah, I would say no.
Yeah. The company needs to stay out of that social realm, right? I mean, the law on this is obviously evolving, but there should keeping business contacts away from personal contacts is important. Mm-hmm. And there's all sorts of developing law with respect to companies requiring, in some instances, applicants to submit their social media passwords so that they can go
That's
in
right.
and check out.
Have a full open Facebook and Twitter profile, and the laws allow that?
No, they're changing.
Okay,
that's being responded to at this point. I mean, if I go to hire an attorney and I look at their Facebook page and there's pictures of them with no pants on, that's not the message we want Stanton Law to convey.
No, but you're allowed to scope them out, though, right? I mean, that's not outside of your realm of due diligence when you're looking for an employee.
No, but be careful asking questions to which you really don't want the answer.
Okay. Right?
So, for instance, I'll take a very trite example on this. You get a blind application, you get a blind resume drop, and you have no idea of the ethnicity. Well, let's do it something a little less obvious. You have no idea what this person's religious beliefs are. And you go on their Facebook page, and they are a complete holy roller. Their Facebook page is full of scripture. It is full of fire and brimstone about non-believers of any denomination. Well, and you say, that person's not really a good fit, right? And so I'm not going to hire them. Well, now you've instantly become pregnant with the knowledge of what their religious beliefs are, and you've generated the basis for a religious discrimination suit, whereas if you had not gone out into that, and you would have never known about that, and they might not have ever brought it up. They might keep their personal life completely separate from their professional life. So going out and finding that information might not always be the best course of action for the best hire, especially from a legal perspective.
Well, what about for the applicant themselves? Should you make sure that your profile picture is not you partying at a tailgate weekend as your application is being submitted? I mean, that's probably best practices, but I know many people don't do that.
No, and that would go to, that shows such poor judgment on behalf of an applicant. There's got to be somebody who's got a little bit bigger brain in their head, no matter what position you're looking for, who doesn't put them shooting heroin as their profile picture.
Yeah.
Right.
And I would say from a marketing perspective, that I have to back that up 110%. One of the things that we talk to all our clients about is if I see somebody else's arm in your profile picture, that's a bad profile picture. I don't care how closely you've zoomed in on this picture, whatever we've written on this topic and everything too. But, I have to add on to what Matt was saying about having the website, having the social media presence. Mm-hmm. I've talked to many people who have decided to not work for a company, not take a job that may have been a really good position, but it was based on the website and, whether we could argue whether that's a smart or a not smart decision. But, they're making a judgment about the company and its culture and who they are based on what the website is. And if it's, like you say, out of date and doesn't have any good positive information on it or new information or shows that this is a vibrant company, you may be losing opportunity to work with people that you would really like to have the opportunity to work with.
That's really true. I mean, for companies right now, the market is really hot, and to identify and attract top talent, it could come down to how visible you are on social media, how strong a web presence that you have, how involved you are in the community to earn the acceptance of an offer for a candidate. Because right now, top talent really has the pick of the litter on where they can work, and they're in high demand. And so it's no longer where it was back in 2008 or 2009. You have a job, it's stable, and we pay. That you have to have much more beyond that, which is, you know, a compelling place to work, a great opportunity, a great culture. And how do you get that across on the front end if the applicant hasn't heard of you? It's through the web. And and that's why it's critical that you have an up-to-date, fresh website and a good social media presence.
Marketing your culture is what you're doing. You're letting people know what your company is all about at a core.
Right.
And people can find that organically through social media channels.
Absolutely. And the things that I mentioned, you know, website, social media, LinkedIn, Glassdoor, those are things that you can do today. I think 2.0 are the things that Bonnie's firm is great at, which is, you know, fresh blog posts, getting recognized in publications for best places to work. Some of my favorite clients are the ones that are the best places to work, because we absolutely market that in our initial outreach to candidates when we're proactively recruiting top talent who may not actively be looking, that we're representing a client that is growing like crazy or was recognized as one of the top 10 places to work according to the Atlanta Business Chronicle. Those are awesome opportunities to sell your business as a desired place to work. And it is a huge it's a huge benefit to attracting top talent.
If I can jump in real quick, we're talking about selling the company as a place to work. I certainly think that's important. As a preliminary step, though, and this dovetails on what you said earlier, finding the person who's going to be able to do the job comes first.
Sure.
So I don't want to harp on what a great place Stanton Law is to work as my initial sell. Right. I want to find if this person's going to be able to fill the role that I need before I start talking about what a great place it is to work. If I start talking about what a great place Stanton Law is to work and they get their hopes up about working there, if they want to come online and they're excited about being here, and then I tell them, you're not really a good fit. That falls into another one of my employment law axioms, is angry people sue. And when you have unmet expectations, people get angry and will look for reasons to stick it to you. So, again, I'm not saying that it's not important to have the web presence and that foundation from which to do that. But with an individual candidate, before I'm selling my company and all the benefits it offers and the great pay and the great office space and the dog-friendly environment and all those other things, I want to make sure that this is the person who I want to come there before I start putting those positives out there.
It's an interesting perspective, because I always kind of think of it, you know, the culture and all that sort of stuff almost as more important sometimes than the skills, because I mean, there's a couple of people on my staff who, you know, certainly were very bright and had some skills, and I've been taught them how to, you know, apply that in the marketing environment. But I see what you're saying, that, you know, you get somebody super excited about working for you, and then it's like, you're not really qualified.
We're super cool, and you just don't fit here.
You just told them they're not cool.
Yeah, that's not a good message. But I would say that whatever your threshold is for them being able to do the job, that's up to you as the employer, right? I mean, if you're looking for somebody who can learn on the job, and you're looking for somebody who is a good cultural fit, and you can train them later, that's fine. I'm not suggesting that it has to be that they have to be the valedictorian in order to get their foot in the door. I'm simply suggesting, recognize that if you're pitching something great, this is a great place to work, you might be setting unrealistic expectations for that candidate.
It's an interesting perspective for sure. Mm-hmm. I want to go back to the Matt on, you know, you're talking about that good candidates kind of have their pick at this point of jobs. Beyond compensation, what is it that you see that they are looking for in a good position that they plan to keep for a long time and grow with a company?
Yeah, that's a great question, because 95% of the people that we place, recruit, and ultimately place are gainfully employed. So they are leaving their existing employer to go with the company that we're representing. And I would say, without a doubt, the number one reason why they're open to listening to the opportunity that we have is growth. And growth is defined by, you know, by the individual. Growth might mean a higher title. It might mean more money. It might mean just the ability to grow professionally or personally. But growth is number one, the issue that candidates are experiencing that causes them frustration. They feel like maybe they have hit a wall or a ceiling in terms of how high they can go within their existing organization or how much money that they can earn within their existing organization. So they look elsewhere. And so often we are recruiting candidates, you know, if we're representing a VP role, we're talking to directors or senior directors that immediately we're telling them it's a VP position, so we've caught their attention. So, you know, if I were advising a business on how to retain their top employees, really understand what their motivations are and understand if it's critical that they see a growth path, then work with them to outline what that can be. If you don't, then they're going to hear a call from a recruiting firm like Bell Oaks and listen, whereas before they may not have.
Yeah, I would echo those things as well. Open communication with your employees and making sure that you're seeing seeing and fulfilling their needs is important. And again, this is more from me running a law firm than it is from an employment law perspective. I've recently come into a mindset back last fall as I was looking at some new hires, where I look at my attorneys, look at the attorneys for Stanton Law, as also my clients. Is Stanton Law providing a service for them that they're willing to pay me to do? They're giving me their time. They're giving me a portion of their collections, as it turns out, for the way we compensate them. Am I offering the services that are going to keep them happy here? Am I providing a benefits package that is comparable? Am I providing a good work-life balance? Am I providing a fun place to come to work where you want to be there? Am I assembling a good team with a good reputation? Because I'm selling that to them. I want them to come mm-hmm. to come work here. So making sure that look, I could think that that throwing more money at the problem is what they want, where it may be that they want more reasonable hours. It may be that they want more accessibility. It may be that they want a new computer. I won't know until I ask.
Yeah.
That's a good point, because each employee and each candidate are motivated and appreciate different things. So for an individual, you know, it might be more money. It might be more time off. Vacation is something we talked about earlier. It might be the ability to telecommute one day a week, work from home from time to time. So really understanding that not every problem and not every issue for each employee is solved by throwing them more money. You really got to get in deep with the individual, understand how they're motivated and what they appreciate. There's a great book out there called The Carrot Principle, and it's all about how recognition and rewarding can impact and influence the bottom line of your business, not just retention, but the bottom line of your business. And it talks about how, you know, a timely note or a $20 really thoughtful gift will be remembered so much more than a $200 impersonal gift card. And so just getting to know your employees really well, understanding what's frustrating for them or what they need, and figuring out a way to accommodate that will turn them off to any recruiting call that they get, because they know that they're being heard and they're taken care of.
Absolutely. I have one more question. Well, actually, I have two more questions, but real quick, what do you, and this goes to both you guys, see as the biggest mistake, or the most common mistake actually, that business owners make in regards to hiring and managing employees?
I would say, again, rushing into it. And then the second thing that we're talking about is by not taking care of problems as soon as they arise. You know, the rehabilitating a poor employee is either going to work or it's not. And the sooner you really recognize that it's not going to work, move on down the line and find somebody it is. It doesn't have to be an acrimonious process with somebody who's not there. Providing them the opportunity to resign and let them not have to face an involuntary separation. But in any event, getting somebody in who can do the job, who can do a better fit, watching people wind up with the problem lingering is probably the most common one. Now, I would also say that, and let Matt jump in, I don't see issues when we have a good employee and a bad supervisor, right? No employment law issues there. I don't see employment law issues when you have a good supervisor and a bad employee, because a good supervisor can manage that person out. I also don't see employment law issues when you have a good employee and a bad supervisor. Good employees leave, right? Where I see employment law issues is when you have a bad supervisor and a bad employee, because they get involved in who's got the bigger Johnson out there, and they're gonna be arguing about it. That's where that friction really starts. And so bad employees have a lower expectation on what they are supposed to do. They're being told what to do. If you're having employment law issues, let's start with our frontline supervisors. Are they adequately trained in order to handle these things? In many instances, take an engineering firm, for instance. An engineer gets hired on as a PE or whatever it is, and then gets promoted to the head of a department because their lines are really straight. They are good engineers. Well, what makes a good engineer doesn't necessarily translate into making a good manager, right? In fact, in that instance, it may make them a poor manager.
I would argue that is the case.
And so making sure that if I'm seeing employment law issues, right, it may not always be the employee's fault. It may be that we haven't trained our first and second level supervisors in order to adequately handle that. So that dovetails into another mistake I see them make.
Good point.
Yeah, I would say that finding a great hire, somebody who is technically able to do the job and is a great culture fit, often takes a lot of time. It can take 2-3 months. And by going through that process, you get to the end of the third month and you're really feeling a pinch and you really want to close this project and be done with it. Again, oftentimes that can cloud your judgment because you are hiring somebody who you want more than the candidate wants the job. And so that's the number one rule of thumb that I would encourage people to consider. Do I want this person to accept the job more than the person actually wants the job? And if that's the case, back up and, you know, really, really think about, you know, the ramifications of hiring that individual. And if you can't figure that out yourself, then maybe consider utilizing a third person or, you know, third party firm, or a, you know, just maybe even a consultant that doesn't have a dog in the fight to assess the situation and see the forest through the trees.
Well, that actually dovetails to the final question I had is, you know, what is the tipping point when they need to hire a search firm to help find the person that they're looking for? You know, maybe it's they've exhausted their network, but what do you see? I mean, what are the best clients for you? And what is that tipping point when they should bring somebody like you in?
Yeah, absolutely. A couple of instances. One, if they just lose a key employee, somebody that they didn't expect was going to leave, and then they've left and they're in a lurch, and they really need a real focus and effort on that search because they need to find somebody within their industry who has the technical abilities but is also going to be a great culture fit. A search firm can come in and have a very laser focus to execute that position. Naturally, companies try and utilize their own network or internal employees to promote within. When they don't have the right person internally or through their own network, then that's another time to engage a search firm. Also, we talked about, you know, exiting people out of the organization. If you were running a search and you need to be confidential, you can't post that job online, you can't even talk about it within your own network, you need a third-party firm to run that search on a confidential basis and find candidates without disclosing who the company is. That's a really sensitive issue, but it's oftentimes necessary. And I would say about a third of the searches that we execute at Bell Oaks are confidential in nature. And then last, you know, you're just not seeing the level of candidate that's necessary. Oftentimes companies are posting the job and they're throwing it out to their network. Well, you're really sourcing candidates from a pool that are of people that are looking at job boards or that you already know. There's a whole talent pool out there that you're not even canvassing. Those are the passive candidates who are actively employed and don't have time to look at the job boards. That's exactly who third-party search firms like Bell Oaks go after. And oftentimes, that's where the top talent resides.
Perfect. What about you, Todd? When should somebody hire an employment attorney? When they've been sued? Or maybe before that?
I would say by lunchtime.
Yeah.
There's still a good 20 minutes left before lunch break. The sooner the better. The employers who I see getting in the hot water simply don't know what they don't know. Come spend an hour and a half, and let me walk you through the employment laws to which you are subject. Now, and that at least gives a business owner the opportunity to decide which business decisions to make. But if you're flying blind about what compensation laws are, if you're flying blind about what employee leave laws are, that's a problem, right? And to start off with an employment lawyer and buy a couple hours of my time or somebody else's is a wise investment to figure out what it is that you don't know. If you're waiting till you get demand letters, right, you will be shocked at how quickly legal bills mount up just to resolve a case. And it's not an instance in which I'm facing, I don't represent a whole bunch of bigots and sexists and misogynists and ageists and all of those things, and yet I stay pretty busy with employees who think that they work for somebody like that, right? Or report to somebody like that. So if we can get out ahead of those issues and recognize what is being perceived and what your rights and obligations are as an employer, you're going to be far, far in front of the process when you do get that demand letter.
Oh, that makes all the sense in the world. Absolutely.
Yeah, some great pro tips from two gentlemen here today on these subjects. Remind our listeners, first, Matt, how they can find you and your organization.
Yeah, thanks, Ryan. We're at Bell Oaks Executive Search, www.belloaks.com. And our website was actually just redone by a good friend of ours, Bonnie from BBR. So we'd love to have some new visitors and also share their comments or their feedback.
Good deal. And the link will be posted on our website here later today or tomorrow, so you can find Matt and his organizations there. So thank you so much. If we can help you further your cause or amplify your mission there at Bell Oaks, here on Atlanta's Most Trusted Advisors, please let us know. We'd be happy to do so.
Thanks, Ryan.
All right. And Todd, tell folks how they can find you and Stanton Law.
We are at stantonlawllc.com, the award-winning website at stantonlawllc.com. We'd love for you to stop by, and we just moved into a great new office space over off Plasters near the Sweetwater Brewery. So we hope you stop by at some point.
So some good lunches happening there, I bet.
Yeah, a lot of liquid lunches.
Yes, very good too. So please do come back and join us here. We'd love to feature you again on the show. And Bonnie, remind our listeners how they can find out about you and your services.
Yeah, I am the president of BBR Marketing, and our website is the same. It's bbrmarketing.com, and we are a full-service marketing firm that work with professional services providers. So we have been fortunate enough to have actually done work with both of these gentlemen, and would absolutely love to talk to anybody that needs our help.
Good deal. And remind our listeners, too, to stay tuned for more episodes of Atlanta's Most Trusted Advisors, brought to you by Atlanta Business Radio and Bonnie Buell Russick here. So stay tuned for that. We got some upcoming episodes. We're going to be talking about hiring, managing employees, maintaining network information security, tax regulations, and so much more happening here in Atlanta. Our goal is to provide valuable information that all business owners and managers can use in their day-to-day work and help them succeed and prosper. So reach out to us on Twitter at Business Radio X. Leave your thoughts and comments there. Make sure you're following us and staying connected with us on Facebook as well at Business Radio X. So on behalf of Stone Payton and Lee Cantor and the entire Business Radio X network, for Bonnie Buell Russick, I'm Ryan Red Hawk McPherson. We will see you again on the radio.